Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Welcome to Football is Family, a podcast dedicated to the fan and fan experience. My name is Jeremy McFarland, and I want to look at the positives behind what makes football so enjoyable to watch and follow. I want to know why you are a fan of your team, of a player, or an era of football. Whether the pros, college, or high school, I want to hear and share your stories and your love for the game. If you want to be part of this podcast, please message me on Twitter at Jeremy_McFarland or on Facebook at the Football is Family Facebook page.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
I'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football is Family podcast. And if you hear kind of a humming in the background, it's going to be on. The air conditioner is on in Tennessee. It's about 100 degrees here in the shade, and it's just got too brutal. So this is how we stay cool in Tennessee. We have a window unit. That's how we work. That's how we roll here. But I am privileged to have a special guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeremy. My name is Sean Conley. I'm a former football player at the University of Pittsburgh, as well as a few stops in the NFL. And now I'm teaching yoga and meditation in Pittsburgh with my wife.
See, this is the thing. He's in Pittsburgh. My father-in-law would be doing backflips if he was still alive, because I'm talking to somebody in Pittsburgh who went to the University of Pitt. He was a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and he would remind me how many times the Steelers won Super Bowls compared to the Titans.
That's easy. I mean, I grew up a Cleveland Browns fan. My dad has passed, but if he was still around, I don't think he could believe the number of Super Bowls the Browns, or they've even gotten to these years.
Are you still a Browns fan because of what happened yesterday? We got to talk about it.
No. The Browns are being the Browns. No, I grew up a hardcore Browns fan. My father used to take me from, I'd say, like, as young as age eight, he'd take me up to Cleveland. You know, it was like a 2-hour drive from Erie. We'd sit in the dog pound. I would smell all the marijuana around me and learn all kinds of new words. But once I finished playing football at the University of Pittsburgh and started getting offers to sign as a free agent in the NFL, I just kind of shifted. Instead of being like a fan of a team, I just became I just wanted to play football. And now I'm back to just being a fan of the sport.
Well, good. Did you throw dog bones onto the field?
I did not, but I saw that, and I definitely barked.
Oh, you have to. If there are people up there in Cleveland right now listening, I'm sorry. The only team that's more dysfunctional than you are the Washington Commanders. That's all I can say about that. It's awful. You guys deserve a lot more. But anyway, let's get back on track here. Sean, you played in college, you played in the pros. What brought your football fandom and your football, you playing college and professional, what brought that about?
Yeah, my biggest influence would certainly be my father. My father played baseball, basketball, football in high school, and he was just he was a great athlete. I'd never really heard that from him. He never talked about his sports that much, but I'd hear it from like his friends. He was drafted by the Pirates. He had an opportunity to play single A baseball, so he was just this phenomenal athlete. So growing up in Erie, which is also a huge sports town, especially football and baseball. So like football was on our house on the TV in the house every weekend. Like, so on Saturdays it was Notre Dame football. Erie's like a big Catholic town. So like, Notre Dame, that was the big school that everyone watched on Saturday. And then on Sundays was, you're either a Cleveland Browns fan based on like where Erie's located or the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so we were huge Browns fans. And if the Browns weren't on TV, he would take me to a bar across the border in Ohio and we'd watch the Browns, but we never missed the Cleveland Browns. And so I just grew up, that was, to me, the NFL football was everything. So from a very young age, I started to play football, age 8, actually, and played it until my career ended in my mid-20s.
That's one thing about this show, Sean, that I really like hearing is where it became part of your life. You said your dad brought you up in it, that's some special moments that you would never ever trade, would you?
No, absolutely not. And my father passed away about 5 years after my NFL career ended, and part of my career, he had colon cancer. He was actually getting cancer treatment where he had to inject himself with a shot for his treatment at the time. And when I was with the Indianapolis Colts, he would drive from Erie to Indianapolis. He would stay at a Motel 6. I would go over, I'd hang out with him, and sometimes spend the night and then just get back early in the morning to back to the hotel room. But he just he just loved football, and it wasn't like he pushed me. Like, it wasn't like it was his dream for me to make it to the NFL. It was just he always just let me play whatever sport I wanted, and he never drove me. But it was certainly like being able to share that dream with him was pretty special.
That's incredible. That's something. My son passed away 6 weeks ago yesterday.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
I brought this up, and thank you. And I brought this up in the past episodes. If you have problems with depression, please seek help. Please. But my son was not a sports fan, but I took him once to a Tennessee Titans game, and all he wanted to do was watch my phone. So that's my football story with my son. But I'm glad that you had that moment with your dad. Now, what I remember when you were talking with Darren, you were originally a soccer player.
Right.
And then you kind of, you didn't play football in high school, but you did walk on to a Division III school.
Right.
One, but then you got another.
Right.
Yeah, could you tell me about that while I go ahead and turn this air off, because it's getting a little loud in here? Go ahead.
Yeah. So I just spent my high school was supposed to have a football team, and then that they were supposed to start one up by freshman year, but they didn't. And so then, but I liked my high school, so I just stayed there. And I, the plan I came up with was because back in the 80s, late 80s, especially, there was a lot of European soccer players coming to the NFL. A lot of guys who didn't play in high school. One of them was like Morten Andersen. And I just thought, hey, these guys could do it. They're not playing in high school. And so I would just train on the side when I wasn't playing my other sports, either basketball or soccer. And I would just, there was a field not too far from my house. I'd just go train there. Every time I had an opportunity. And then the idea was to walk on, eventually Division I. But what happened was after high school, I decided, hey, I'm just going to start small, get some confidence in Division III. First school I went to, they said I could walk on. But then the first day of practice, the coach changed his mind, said he already had enough kickers. So 3 months later, I essentially just dropped out of school there. I got really depressed and started drinking, think my whole dream was messed up. But luckily, there was a school, my hometown, Erie Gannon University, which started a football team for the first time since right after World War II. And so they just took anybody wanted to play. So for 2 years, I kicked for Gannon. I wasn't very accurate. I was able to kick the ball really deep into the end zone. But I think my accuracy was somewhere around 25-30%. Then I decided, hey, I got one more chance. I have one more year of eligibility. So I went to the University of Pittsburgh. They had four or five kids already on scholarship, but I was able to work my way up from spring ball as like the number 7 kicker. And by the time I was at half an hour before the first kickoff, the special teams coach came up to me and told me that I was a starting kicker. So I was able to get that just in time. And I was able to play 1 year for the University of Pittsburgh. So it worked out. It was a very unconventional route, but it all worked out in the end.
most dreams can't, well, most dreams are unconventional how to get to them, aren't they? You don't, you have a goal in your life where you say, I have a golden path, but usually you end up on the goat path to get to where you want. And that's why you have to stick to it. You never know when it's going to end, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I think that really helped my career as I went on, you know, being rejected by that Division III school, you know, having some success at that second Division III school at Gannon, but also having a lot of failures. And then just, you know, being able to, you know, go to an environment where four or five kickers, like when I showed up, they just wanted nothing to do with me. I just got this, you know, like, you know, I was this walk-on. These guys had scholarships that were all told that they would be the starting kicker at Pitt at some point. And, you know, so I think that just helped, you know, just me able to just like dial into my own world to the point where these guys weren't my competition. It was just me. And so I just had to, I just knew I had to do what I needed to do to be successful. So I just, you know, was able to, you know, learn just to block out, you know, competition. And, I think that just really helped me when I was able to go on to the next level.
Let me ask you this. Let's go back to your first rejection, because I imagine that has a lot to do with what you wrote in your new book, The Point After,
right?
Which is available on Amazon, Books a Million. I have a link on my Twitter page. Click on it. Give this book a chance. What got you out of that depression? Was it opportunity, or was it family, or was it all above?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that got me out of it was kicking, doing something I loved. And because what happened was, when I first came back to Erie, I just got really down about it, and I thought my dream was over. It was now January in Erie, and January in Erie, you know, the sun goes down by 4 o'clock, and it's dark, it's cold, and so I wasn't kicking at all. I just decided, you know, I was going to wait till the spring, and didn't know where I was going to go to school, but. What happened was I decided, even though it was wintertime, I just started kicking, and I would go to the field, and I would just kick on, you know, it was like snowpack, 12, 18, you know, 24 inches of snow and ice. I just kick right on top of that. And just, you know, being outside and kicking and doing something that I really loved. And I found that, you know, like looking back on it, it was something that I think was just like it was therapy for me. It was meditation, just, you know, doing something I loved. And I think, you know, that the combination of all that, you know, being outside and, you know, doing something I loved, it just really helped pull me out of it, where I felt like, you know, like I can keep going. And ironically, that training on these really, you know, shitty conditions of snow and ice and cold, by the time I got down to the University of Pittsburgh, you know, it didn't matter whether we played a home game on turf or a road game on grass. Like we played like a Penn State in a monsoon, like with just raining, the field conditions never bothered me. So it actually, just being in these really bad conditions and also being in a bad headspace and knowing that I could come out of it, you know, I think that really helped my career going forward as a kicker.
You faced adversity, obviously you faced it then. Did you get any encouragement from outside that kind of helped you along?
Yeah, the biggest help I got is when I walked on at the University of Pittsburgh. We had a brand new coach there. His name was Amos Jones. He's coaching the NFL today, so he's been around a really, really long time. He played for the Bear. He played for Bear Bryant, and I always had a challenge with like perfectionism. So I always wanted to be like this perfect kicker. I wanted to be able to kick it at like a certain distance. And I wanted to be able to, like, you know, like never miss. And I wanted to have this perfect training regimen. So I would spend a lot of time after practice going into the video room and looking over my kicks. And one day he hollered at me and he said, "You need to stop." Cause I would spend a lot of time working on the kicks that I'd missed, like, you know, what I did with my plant foot, you know, how I struck the ball, my follow through, et cetera. And he said, "You need to spend more time on your successful kicks and what you do right." And at this time, I wasn't named the starting kicker. This was between spring ball and summer camp for the upcoming season. And that really shifted a lot of things for me, where I realized I needed to work on positivity. And he, you know, just reinforcing that in my mind. And he said where he learned that from, he must have been ahead of his time, what was Bear Bryant. He said after they played a game, because he played and coached for Bear Bryant, Bear Bryant would bring the whole team into the auditorium. And he said for maybe 5 minutes or so, he'd show them up on the big screen, you know, some mistakes they made, like, "Hey, we need to get better here, we need to get better there." But then he said for the next portion of the video, it was all their successful plays. And he'd show them like, you know, look what you did here. Like, you know, like, you know, get this in your mind. So he would show that to the players. And he said, that was huge. Like, so the players, he said, they you know, it just helped like them having a positive attitude, and it must've worked them, you know, the success that Bear Bryant had. But he said that was big for him. And that was something that he tries to instill like Amos Jones into the players is, hey, yeah, like it's good to know, you know, to work on your technique and get better, but don't forget all the things that have gotten you to this point in your career.
How did you transition from a soccer kicker to a field goal kicker? Because I want to say, and I might be off on this, Lou Groza, it was a straight on kicker mm-hmm. for years, and Lou Groza brought that in for the Bills, was it? I believe it was for the Bills. But how did you know, you have your plant foot, you have your kick, but you kick up instead of out. I mean, how did you transition? Because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't too difficult, you know, because I played soccer and I played different positions, but I was a goalkeeper. And kicking a football is very similar when you see a goalkeeper take a goal kick where he just lines up and drives it where he's going for distance and he's also going for height. So for me, it wasn't that difficult. That the hardest part for me in the transition was to kick it straight between like the narrow goalpost, because the sweet spot in the football is about the size of a nickel that you want to hit. And the part of your foot as well is about the size of a nickel. So you need that perfect coordination between, you know, that bony part near your toe and that small sweet spot. And so if either one of them is off just by a little bit, that could change the trajectory of the football. And, you know, the further back you are, if you're off just by a little bit, that's why you'll see like those, you know, 40, 45 yard field goals just go slightly right or slightly to the left. That's because there was something just slightly off with the sweet spot or something slightly off with the plant foot. Cause the plant foot has to, you know, when that plant foot hits the ground, it has to be pointed at the center of the goalpost. If it's slightly off to the left or the right, that's going to change the direction of the kick.
That mean that you practice more on placement than you do kicking?
Yeah, for sure. Because the placement's huge. Because what also comes into play is if your plant foot is too far forward, you're not going to get under the ball enough, and it could be like a knuckleball or something like that. If you're back too far, if your plant foot ends up being back too far, then you're gonna get under the ball, and then it's gonna get under too much air, and it's not gonna go as far. So that plant foot has to like be in the perfect position when you strike the ball, and it takes a while to get to the point. That's where I was always trying to perfect it. But what I discovered was it wasn't thinking about that foot like, you know, like looking at it over and over again. It was more about getting the feel. And once I got the feel down, like, hey, this is like, I got to a point where I didn't even have to like look up. I knew if the ball was going through the goalpost. You'll see that a lot in the NFL. Like, well, they'll show the replay where the kicker is already celebrating. He hasn't even really like looked up, but he just knows that ball, he struck it perfectly and it's going straight and far.
Well, I had the chance, I go to the Titans training camp up in Nashville when they've had it, and hopefully they'll have it again this year. And a few years ago, I had the chance to watch Rob Baronis do his thing. Now, if you don't know who Rob Baronis is, I know Mr. Sean here, he probably knows exactly who he is. He was one of the best kickers. In fact, I think he set a record a few years ago against the Texans by kicking the most field goals in a game and won the game for the Titans. But I looked at it, and in the way he set up, it looks like it was effortless. It had no effort. It required no effort. But I imagine that's because he has gone through it not only through his high school years, his college years, but obviously through the pros. You just don't happen on greatness, do you?
No, absolutely. And once you get to the level of the NFL, you know, there's a saying that, you know, kicking is 90% mental. And the other 10% is mental as well. And, you know, once these kids, these college players, you know, once they're in training camps and trying to make it in the NFL, like the difference between them with their physical capabilities is pretty minuscule. And in many cases, you could say it's the same. What it comes down to is like which kickers have like a stronger mental game where they're able to bounce back quicker. Because at some point, every kicker is going to miss For most kickers, if you miss one, that's okay. But if you miss two in a row, that's when things can really unravel, and which kickers can let go of those pass kicks quicker are usually the ones that can have longer careers. And maybe I just say this because I'm a kicker. Luck definitely plays in as well. You know, it's when you miss too, as well as, if you miss a kick when you're up 35 to 10, people aren't going to think about it. But if you miss a couple kicks at the wrong time, even though it's not the pressure, just happened to be like your foot placement or something. But there's not much mercy in the NFL once you miss two or three in a row.
Again, we remember the wide right for the Bills in that Super Bowl. We remember
totally.
That, but we don't remember the fact that most kickers in the NFL hit 90 some odd percent on their extra points, even though they moved it back. Most people think that a 60 yarder or a 50 yarder is automatic, which I'm not good with math, but I was watching somebody do some calculations. Just a little wind, like you're saying, foot placement wrong, could take a 1 inch off, can go 10 feet. I mean, it's amazing how hard it is for you to do those things. Did you have any moments in the pros that you thought, how in the world did I hit that?
Yeah, probably the most challenging kick I had, it wouldn't be like a last second kick. The one that was my biggest challenge that I'm very grateful that I made looking back is when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, we were playing Rutgers, and it was the third game of the season. And before that game, we played WVU, and I missed an extra point, which is a big no-no. And I was already on like shaky ground because I was a walk-on, and there was other scholarship players that I had beat out. And Amos Jones, a special teams coach, he always had my back. Like, he thought I was easily the best of the bunch. But the head coach was more conventional, and because he didn't really know kickers, he wanted to always go with the veterans. So my special teams coach Amos Jones had to talk him and just get me the starting position. And then he had always like fight to help keep it, because what happened was, I missed that kick against WVU. And then my first kick against Rutgers was a 44 yarder. And I missed that. So now I was 0-for-2. And I saw the head coach tell my special teams coach, hey, let's pull him out and put in another kicker. And he said, no, he's okay. Give him one more chance. So we got down the field goal position, and it was a 44 yarder. And so this was, probably my most pressure packed kick, because I knew if I missed, like, that was it. This was three in a row. And there was another, there was a kicker on scholarship on the team who's going to take my job. But, luckily I made that, but the good thing about like being in that position is once I made that, I felt like, hey, I don't think it's ever going to get tougher than this. You're never going to be in this position. That really helped me, help build a lot of confidence. I didn't miss any kicks the rest of the season until the very last game of the season. So I went like the next 8 or 9 games, make it every kick, but it was being put in that position and overcoming it that really helped.
Tell me, what is the book, The Point After, about?
Yeah. So it's just about, just like an underdog story of a football player who is actually like the more common football player. I just felt, writing a story, because a lot of the sports books I've read are usually about, someone like a Tom Brady who makes it all the way to the top. But what really fascinated me when I was in the NFL was interacting with so many players who were always like one play away from being out, so like on the fringe. So it's more of a story about like what it's like being a fringe football player, like always being on the outside looking in, like being on a team than off the team. Cause I got cut, 3 times. In addition to that, I was invited to a whole bunch of tryouts by NFL teams, like during the middle of the season when they need a kicker. So by the time my career ended, I pretty much interacted with probably about, 3/4 of the NFL. I knew like all the special teams coach at some point. I also got to play in the World Football League. So the book is also about that, where I spent a whole season with a bunch of players who were like on the outside looking in. And I just wanted to tell the human aspect of it all. And also the advantage of being a kicker, you get to be a spectator too. So, I had a lot of great interactions with some interesting football players, such as, Barry Sanders, Dan Marino. And so I also like write about like, what's it like, interacting with them and how they achieve like their greatness. But I really try to focus on the story of the downs, because I think that's what we don't hear about when we watch all these football stories. So I really like try to share as much as I could about what it feels like to be rejected and to bounce back from that.
I'm noticing your back. Of course, this is on a podcast, and I'm pointing to the back in his background. He has a Detroit Lions helmet. He has a New York Jets helmet, which I love that Jets helmet. That's the old school Joe.
Classic. Name. Yep. Yep.
What's your favorite NFL story that, of you that you're in? What's your favorite story?
Probably it was meeting Barry Sanders when I was at the Detroit Lions. We were about maybe just 3 or 4 days in the training camp. And before practice, all the players would go out and they would essentially warm up before like the actual organized team warm up. And I'm just standing there, you know, do my little stretches. And I see Barry Sanders, number 20, starting to saunter over towards me. I had no idea. I'm thinking, why is Barry Sanders walking towards me? What does he want to ask me? What does he want to talk about? And he just said, hey, you want to play catch? So I'm like, wow. Okay. So here I am, rookie, Barry Sanders. So of course I said, yes. And that ended up being my routine before practice for the next 5 or 6 weeks. I play catch with Barry Sanders before every practice. And we play the Dallas Cowboys in London a few weeks later. And the first couple of nights, the head coach, Wayne Fonts, let us party as long as we wanted, 3, 4 a.m. And I came wandering into the lobby one night after being at the pub with all the other rookies doing what rookies do. And Barry Sanders is sitting there reading a Stephen King book. And I sat down next to him and, I just asked him, we're shooting the shit. And I just said, hey, I mentioned something about being concerned about being cut and like, what's next? And he told me, hey, whatever whatever happens to your NFL career, remember that there's more to life than the NFL, which ended up being the subtitle for my book. But he told me that at the time he told me that I really didn't believe it because for me, that's everything I wanted to be. And I didn't know what I would do afterwards. And that was like my whole identity, but that was probably something that impacted me the most because, I learned my lesson the hard way, but that's something I look back and I realized, I love football, but now, I'm more interested in the humanity of the game and looking back, I wish I was probably more in the present moment when I was in my football career, but I spent probably a little too much worrying about what was coming next and whether I had a job the next day. It's hard to let go of that because that's the reality of it. But, it certainly was a good lesson for me.
When did you, in your life, when did you find purpose? When you found purpose?
Yeah, I think when I found purpose was much after my career when picking up with what Barry Sanders said about there being more to life. I think when my career ended and I just started getting I threw myself a pity party. Now I'm not going to be an NFL player. My whole plan was to play it until I was 40. And I think what helped me find purpose is I began to get into yoga and meditation. And I realized hey, maybe I can, work with athletes and work with people who are also in the same boat as me, who maybe also struggle to, define purpose and identity and go through any sort of struggle, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. And so that's what really got me into eventually switching my career and teaching yoga and meditation. That's what I do today. And it's all behind what happened in my football career.
Let's see purpose, Mr. Sean. Come here, ladies. Come here. This is my daughter, Harmony.
Oh, right hello.
Hi. And this is my daughter, Kelsey.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
They've given me purpose.
That's the last awesome.
Few weeks. And, she actually drew me a Godzilla.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you. And Kelsey over here, I'm a nerd.
Wow.
Yes.
That's excellent.
I can't do any of that.
Wow. No, I can do stick figures and stuff. That's all by hand. That's impressive.
It's more than I can barely do any of that stuff, but yeah. And there's something that my daughter did as well.
Love it.
But I'm glad that you're finding purpose and I'm glad that you've helped people find purpose through ways to not only affect their body, but also affect their mind. And as I'm seeing the time running down on this, Zoom limits me on certain things. I think we sometimes forget that the body is not the only thing that needs to be worked out. You have a spiritual aspect of your life, but you also have a mental aspect of your life. And if you can get all three of those working together, you're light years ahead of other people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting now too, because, you know, mental health and beyond, like, physical is now being talked about in the professional and collegiate sports world. And 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't at all. And you're seeing a lot of big time colleges. I know Wisconsin, Michigan, they have whole programs now staffing, you know, to help help the athletes. And, you know, this whole, you know, identity struggle for athletes is so real and so common. You know, they struggle with it while they're in it. And I know it's very easy for us to think, oh, they're all, you know, just like privileged athletes. But a lot of them just, they struggle off the field. And I think any support that we can give them now is it's nice to see that it's growing and it's being talked about. And, you know, we're seeing like more balanced athletes now. I think you're even starting to see like athletes retire earlier than expected, because I think they're just seeing, hey, I don't need to keep beating up my body. There's other things for me to do in life that's more important.
Okay. Let's kind of, like I said, wrap this up, because Zoom is telling me I have to wrap it up. Let's do two things here. Okay. Number one, if you have words of wisdom that you can give to our listeners, what would that be?
Well, I think the biggest thing right now, just like from what I learned would be, I guess, I hate the word advice, but just from my experience is just you know, moderation as a young athlete. You know, so if you have you're a parent who has a young athlete who has aspirations, like my son, he plays baseball and he's feeling the pressure in that world right now. He's 14, where a lot of kids his age are playing year-round baseball and they're specializing in it, and you're seeing kids get surgeries at or getting surgeries due to overuse of their joints at ages 12, 13, 14, and they are just, they're pushing them, and a lot of the young athletes are, well, this is because this kid, everyone else is doing it, and the same with the parents. And so I think it's just you know, finding some balance in like you know, whatever sport you're doing, and realizing, like, you know, the body can only, the more you run, it's like a car, like how fast you drive it, it's going to burn out and break down. And so, like, we're seeing so many young athletes that are burning out, not just physically from the overuse, but also mentally. Like, you know, I hear story after story where a kid is driving on like all these travel teams from a very young age, and then they get to age 18, they get offered a scholarship, and they're like, oh, sorry, mom and dad, I'm done. Peace out. I'm just gonna go to school now. So I think it's just, you know, finding that balance of, you know, whatever sport you're doing, so that doesn't happen to you.
That's a good thing. Balance in life is hard to find, and and I'm glad you're saying that. So where can we find Sean Connolly? Where can we find him on social media?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I'm on Instagram, but I guess I spend more time these days on Twitter. So a little bit on Facebook. Yeah, but mostly Instagram and Twitter. And then I have a website as well, where I have my book and also the stuff with yoga and meditation as well, which is seanconnolly.net.
I was on your website earlier yesterday and today. It is a fantastic website. Y'all did a great job. You're on there with your wife as well?
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. If it wasn't for my wife, like, going back to like my purpose. Yeah. If it wasn't for my wife and the kids, that's my number one purpose for sure.
I would give her credit for all that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. No, my NFL crew would have flamed out much, much earlier if I wouldn't have her to like keep going. She was actually one of the very few people who like believed in my dream of like walking on and all that. Cause it just seems so unconventional, but she's also a dreamer who doesn't care about failing. And so she supported me through the whole thing. And there's a couple times that, you know, I thought about like giving up and during my NFL career. And she's like, no, you got to keep going until you've gotten every no possible.
Thank you for being an inspiration, and check out his book, The Point After, Amazon, Books a Million, Barnes and Noble, on your website too.
Yeah.
Check out that book, please. And Mr. Sean, thank you for coming on the Football's Family Podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy, for having me. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate it. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Play Classic Sports Simulation Board Games, spelled with two A's, PLAAY. Realistic board game recreations of professional football, hockey, baseball, NASCAR, golf, and more. They cover 9 sports in all, with a 10th, basketball, coming in 2022. You can relive great sessions of the past, create what-if matchups from different eras, and much more. It's fun. So if you're into sports history, you should check them out. That's Play with two A's, P-L-A-A-Y, classic.com. And don't forget to use the code SHN at checkout and get 10% off your first order.
Hey, are you ready for some football? Some fantasy football? How about some daily fantasy football? Silly questions, right? Of course you are. You're ready to talk some smack and win some cash every Sunday and Thursday and Monday and whenever there's football games. The Sports History Network invites you to play your daily fantasy football this season at ThriveFantasy.com. Thrive Fantasy offers hundreds of thousands, millions in cash every day on NBA, MLB, PGA, golf, cricket, esports, and of course, NFL football. And just to get the 2021 NFL season started right, Thrive Fantasy is holding its $100,000 guaranteed contest with a $20,000 first prize. Sign up with Thrive Fantasy today to get a 100% match bonus on your first deposit for up to $100 in free daily fantasy football play. Visit sportshistorynetwork.com/thrive. That's T-H-R-I-V-E. Or enter promo code SHN when depositing at the cashier. Join Thrive Fantasy today, earn cash prizes, and support great shows like this at the Sports History Network. Now that's a win-win-win situation for you to kick off your own NFL season.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings you sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of you unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus, get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser-known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.